My name is Joanne Blackman Bland, and I live in historic Selma, Alabama. I think as a nation we've come a long way, but we have a long way to go. And as we elders get weary, the children are going to have to be the ones to take us where we need to go. And they need to be equipped. So I think I found my niche in life, teaching the lessons of the past to facilitate a better future. In the early 60s, Selma became a hotbed for voting rights. Dr. King chose this area for the battleground for voting rights in these United States. Some of the reasons that he chose this area was because of the work that had already been done toward obtaining voting rights for all people by the residents of Selma, namely Amelia Boynton and her husband Samuel Boynton, who formed an organization in the early 1930s called the Dallas County Voters League. The way our history is written, our children, our adults come away with the picture that Dr. King came in 1965, and by August of 1965, we had the Voting Rights Act. No, that's not how it happened. It was a progression of 30-some-odd years before he even came that caused it. So we're noted for the Edmund Pettus Bridge, where one of the biggest confrontations of that voting rights struggle happened, where we attempted to march from Selma to Montgomery peacefully and were attacked by law enforcement officers on the bridge. And as ordered by our governor, he says he didn't tell them to beat us, but he told them that there would be no march between Selma and Montgomery. And the events in the past few days have just given me lots of flashbacks. The tear gas in Ferguson and the tear gas here in Selma. And they're not good memories. I participated in all three marches. On Bloody Sunday, I didn't realize that there would be violence. Otherwise, I don't think I would have been there. I was 11 years old in 1965. I had been participating in the activities since I was around 8. My earliest memory is going to a meeting of the Dallas County Voters League with my grandmother, Sylvia Johnson, and not understanding why they talked about getting freedom. My teacher had already told me that Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves. I just thought they were dumb old people, that they didn't understand, they didn't know that we had our freedom. And we were downtown on Broad Street. We live in a small town, so downtown is Broad Street, okay? There's a drugstore, it's still there today, called Carter's Drugstore. Carter's had a lunch counter. And I wanted to sit at the lunch counter, as any child would. But my grandmother said I couldn't because colored children could not sit at the counter. It didn't stop me from wanting to sit at that counter. Every time I passed by there, I'd be peeping in that window. And one day, my grandmother was talking to one of her friends in front of the store. And she noticed me looking in the window, and she leaned over my shoulder, and she pointed in the window and said, "When we get our freedom, you can do that too." I became a freedom fighter that day. I couldn't wait to get down to First Baptist Church with my sisters, where that was SNCC headquarters, so that I could help get that freedom, because I wanted to sit at that counter. I didn't understand how what we were doing, how voting related to my life. I didn't understand that at that time. That came much, much later. We go through life with blinders on sometimes. If you talk to anyone in Selma today, you would probably get the same answer, that we don't have racial problems until, you know, someone stirs it up. So if you stir it up, it's always there. It's something that triggers you to stir it up. And if it's there, it's going to come up. So I don't know how a white person, I know they can empathize and they could feel the pain of injustice just as I can, but they could never feel the pain of injustice that I feel. It's not just isolated incidents. It's all the time, there's always something to remind you that we're not where we need to be as a nation, and particularly with race. If it's not African Americans, it's someone else that's non-white. In Ferguson, I understand the pain that's there. I don't know how to describe it to you. I can understand why the people are angry. Every week, it's another murder from policemen. When you live in a small town such as Selma, we have the same pain often, because what do we own? You're sitting in my house in Selma, Alabama, and the area that we're sitting in, we own our houses. But if you go up the street a little bit, those are rented from people who don't even live in our community. When they talk about people tearing up their own communities and not understanding why, it's ludicrous. They don't own a damn thing there, and it's not theirs. So what emotional connection would they have with that? Because I'm used to seeing this building here or this business being here. Give me a job. What did you put in my community besides coming in to get the money and then take the money back to your community, improve your community, and do nothing in mine? I understand that pain. I also know that people don't talk honestly about race. It's hard to be seen as a racist, even if we get close to being characterized as a racist. You want things not to be mentioned, and just don't talk about it. And then we all get along. And the moment that I question something that I think is racist, you put up a wall and we can't talk because you feel like I'm accusing you, and we still have no dialogue. Selma has some surface faces that, if you look at our political makeup, we have an African-American mayor. The city council is predominantly African-American. Most of the departments are headed by African-Americans. And I don't know what the hell they expect. We're 65% black. That's the way it should be. In contrast, Ferguson was where we were in the 80s. You got 3 black cops and 65% black, and you think that's not a problem? It's very hard to put this in a context that would make people who are non-African-American understand. And then we have the issues among ourselves that because of reasons, whatever they may be, some of us went to college, some of us didn't. Some of us put emphasis on education, some of us didn't. Now, there's a lot involved in how that happened, but it has happened. So we address that from the point of where we are. But you don't just write off a group of people who are exercising their right to protest by focusing on the negative part. Here in Selma, in the year 2000, when we elected our first African-American mayor in a town that's always been at least 65% black, a statue of the founder of the Ku Klux Klan was erected on the grounds of one of our museums. And we were angry. It really upset me. It said, "You may have a Negro mayor, but we're still here." Protest shut Selma down. Our poor mayor the first year, it was not a good time. Things like that. It's like one-upmanship. If you got a Negro mayor, then I'm putting this statue up. And this one little old lady told me, "Y'all better let us have something." Do you really feel like we're taking something away from you? Because to me, her fear was that if we were empowered, we would treat them the same way they treated us. I don't think that's in our DNA, although I question being fair at a time when you're already behind If you start being fair now when the race is over, I'm still behind. Catch me up and then start being fair. I used to have that argument with our first black mayor. He'd say, people don't want politicians to be fair. They want them to show favoritism. Duh. Go on that side of town and then come back over here and see what you take as fair. When you continually get hurt by people who don't look like you, the moment you encounter one, you're especially suspicious of them. That here you come smiling, but you're a wolf in sheep's clothing. You're still white, and you're still going to eventually show your true colors, that you don't like me, period. And I tried to teach my children, my child and my grandchildren, that it's not like that. We try to take people at face value. But it's very, very hard for me to explain how racism is expected when you're black, that discrimination is expected when you're black. The problem with that is that we don't question it as often as we should. What happens to us as we grow older is that now we're faced with a real world, that now we gotta go and interact with each other in different ways. You made me mad about a job. I didn't let it go. Although if I was a child, we could have a fist fight this morning and be playing by noon, you know, and still buddy-buddy. But when we're adults, we hold on to craziness. As we grow, we hold on to stupidity, and it becomes us. You have a wall that you could throw up. I have a wall that I could throw up that wasn't there when we were kids. We shared what children share, that sense of peace and freedom to play, to love, to just be happy. What happens to us when we grow up is life. And sometimes it makes us better, but more often than not, it makes us worse. One day, we'll be all right. I'm just tired of waiting for one day. I want it to be now. I want it to be in my lifetime. When we were growing up in the 60s, I thought it would be by now. We'd have that beloved community, and everything would be peaceful. It has not happened.